Welcome, welcome, welcome in to another edition of New Track Record. And Justin, we have made it. It is finally IndyCar race week after
it's
the
time.
Most off-season of all off-seasons for IndyCar. I mean, we look back at all the different stories that happened this off-season, from the video game going away to the Honda threats of leaving to Nashville, move from downtown to now Nashville Super Speedway. I'm sure I'm missing some other glaring, obvious storylines this offseason. We had, you know, Malukas's injury. He's out. Callum Ilott set to replace him. There's a story that came down in the last week. Dale Coyne's driver lineup finally confirmed. Kyle Larson to the Indy 500. I guess we kind of knew that before.
That's been a while. But, you know, even Mark Miles kind of hinted as much when he met with the media last week and said, quote, "I understand the perception question," talking about the perception of the series with the long and tough off season. He said, "But we think that will begin to be less of an issue once we get back on the track and fans are reminded of our great racing." So he didn't say anything to alleviate the issues. He just said, "Well, once we're racing, people won't think about them as much." That's basically what the quote was. And sure enough, here we are ready to start the season. So hopefully the racing starts doing more of the talking.
And we hopefully don't have to talk about any more Alex Palou lawsuits anytime soon.
Knock on wood. We'll see.
So with that, obviously, we'll do our season preview episode, make our picks sure to be wrong for the upcoming 2024 NTT IndyCar Series season. Give you the latest news and headlines, get you a race preview as well, all to come this week. And of course, next week, it'll be our first race recap. So, hard to believe. We're ready. It's March. It's time to get back in the swing of things. Before we get into making our picks and all the previews, so let's just detail what we have out of Dale Coyne Racing, because I think that is, I think, one of the bigger stories. It's not TBA, it's, unfortunately.
No, but as I put on our podcast Twitter earlier this week, I almost like the TBA lineup better.
So based on what we know, it is Jack Harvey and Colin Braun this weekend. That's locked in. Then we'll have Colin Braun again at Thermal, and Nolan Siegel, who's in the series formerly known as Indy Lights. He's running full-time there, and on the weekends there's not a conflict. He'll be in IndyCar. So he will do Thermal in the 18 car. He will also do, and again, it's like, it's kind of hard to believe, he'll do Long Beach, which is technically his home race, right?
Correct.
And then he will do Indy, and then he will Toronto. Also do Toronto. So those are the weeks that there are no conflicts. Jack Harvey will be in the 18 car the rest of the season. The 51, well, we know it's Colin Braun for St. Pete and Thermal. No idea for what's next. Now, word on the street is that Catherine Legg is a strong candidate to run the oval races for Coyne in that 51 entry, but beyond that, there's really no update as to who could land that seat the rest of the way.
We've mentioned Nolan Siegel. We actually asked Rob Howden about Nolan Siegel last week. You cannot convince me he's ready for IndyCar. You cannot. And not only is he going to, you're throwing him out there in IndyCar, you're throwing him out there for the Indianapolis 500.
The good news is there's plenty of practice.
Plenty of practice,
time.
But now you got Long Beach.
I'm more concerned about two street courses.
Right.
I guess Thermal, which is on Championship, not a big deal.
There's two street courses, Long Beach and Toronto.
Long Beach and Toronto, two street courses, Indy 500 and Thermal, a track that's no one raced at. That's the one where we actually feel pretty good about, because outside of, you know, the test drivers have had,
right,
they haven't had a race weekend. So either way, he's behind the eight ball every track, and two street courses and four races for a rookie, that's tough.
Yeah, especially a rookie that I think just needs another year of seasoning in Indy Next, which he is racing in, by the way, Indy Next. Harvey, the 14 races, okay, but then Colin Braun, the only first two for now? Hopefully that turns into more. It's just, I kind of told this to you, like, for Coyne, it's become kind of like an underdog story to kind of sad. Like, this is their lineup, and you announce it the week of the race. You have a guy that really was largely ineffective with Ray Hall and Jack Harvey, and you're taking a kid that is purely just bringing money, Nolan Seale, he's not ready for IndyCar, but he brings a check, so you're going to put him in the seat. And then Colin Braun, who's clearly the most capable, in my opinion, of the entire lot, only guaranteed two races. It's just a very disappointing, underwhelming lineup, and it furthers my belief. I don't know what coin... Are we reaching the end of coin? Is kind of my question. Like, you can't roll out lineups like this year after year, right? I mean, something
has to
change.
Well, and he only has one car returning in the leader circle, right? So that's another issue.
And that's the thing. Like, people are saying, oh, he's chasing the charter, but it's like, you're not going to get a charter if you're not within the top 20-some... 25, what,
20, 22?
Are they doing it the 22 the same?
Well, I mean,
as...
who knows what the charter requirements will be, but I mean, Siegel had two wins. He finished third in the championship last year. It's not like he's like a bad driver, and he tested well.
Yeah, I just, he's
Excuse
not
me,
in the
tested
seat.
Well, but yeah, like you said,
he's not in the seat unless he's bringing money.
Yes.
And I think Nolan Siegel for his career would be better off racing another year full time in Indy next, but. You're just chasing the money when you don't have much of it. I mean, Nolan Siegel, 19 years old. I'm not saying he can't eventually be a guy, but he has 10 total starts in Indy Next. It's not like he's blistered through Next and Indy Pro 2000, all that stuff.
No, he has 16 starts.
In Indy Next?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at
his... I did a full season last year.
Looking at his wiki, so it's probably not updated.
Well, his wiki isn't, but... Well, no, I'm looking at his wiki. He has... 16 combined starts because he started two races in 2022.
Okay.
And then all 14 last season. But yeah, I mean, it is interesting, and this will be kind of the storyline to watch. You know, in F1, they talk about the midfield and IndyCar. We know the big four teams, and then you have Ray Hall, and it's kind of like, you know, which Ray Hall team shows up year to year, right? The competitive one that we saw in the second half, or the one that was uncompetitive we saw in the first half,
right?
All in last season. And then there's everyone else, and the coins, the Juncos, the Ed Carpenter, you know, battling out what will come out of that. We'll be curious to see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It just, obviously a patchwork lineup that who knows if any of those drivers are in the seat at the season finale at this point.
And then the other silly season nugget before we get into our season preview. Foyt confirming to MarshallPruderacer.com, they're planning just two entries for the 108th running of the Indianapolis 500. So that means we are set at 35 entries, unless there's, as Pruitt points out, filing of a 36th entry from an unknown team takes place, but that does not look likely.
35, 36 is what we can expect most years at the maximum. So 35 is fine. We'll bump two.
Yeah. No, I think it's...
And it's good for Foyt. They don't need any more than two cars.
No, I think this is the right move. Yes. So with that, time for our 2024 IndyCar season preview.
All right.
As we finally have the driver lineup.
Yeah, we can
set.
Actually make some predictions. I am going to predict that Penske or Ganassi wins the championship.
Yeah, I think
go out on a limb.
That is pretty safe. So we'll go through the predictions. So I think the first one, who wins the IndyCar championship? I think last year we were both really high on Pato going into the preseason. And not that he did poorly. He didn't win a race, but that team didn't win a race. And we thought they'd kind of be more than what they were last season. He ended up finishing, what, fourth of the standings? But, I mean, Alex Blow just dominated. He left everyone in the dust. This year, do you have an inkling as far as who you think is the favorite to win the championship?
I'm going to go back to Joseph Newgarden.
Same.
I mean, it's kind of boring, right? But... hasn't won the championship in what?
5 years.
5 years, 2019, right?
Hard to believe.
I know, it actually has been hard to believe. He finally got that bucket list item off the list with the Indianapolis 500. And if there's one thing you could really take from 100 Days to Indy last year, it was just really being able to see how big of a deal it was for Joseph to win that race and leading up to it. I mean... It was, he had won two championships. It was all about winning the Indianapolis 500. And now that he's done that, I think now he kind of reopens the prior in terms of what he's focused on, and it becomes the season and winning another 500, obviously. But I think it's an enormous weight off of his back. And to me, again, you can narrow it down to two teams that are going to win this thing, and I'm going to go Joseph Newgarden to win the championship, much like you.
I also am going to go Joseph Newgarden. I like your reasoning in terms of getting the monkey off his back in terms of the Indianapolis 500. The reason why I am so strong on Newgarden going into the season, it's the schedule. I mean, yeah. You have two ovals. Races at Iowa, short oval. He dominates at that track. Two races at Milwaukee.
Short oval.
Another short oval. A race at Gateway. So you have, let's see, that's, and plus then you throw in Nashville, which is
right.
a shorter oval. And I get that he hasn't raced there, but very few drivers in the series that are competing have, right? Dixon, Carpenter.
Yeah, but just Penske is so good at those short ovals.
Yes. You know,
Penske just shows up off the transporter and is able to stick it to the bottom of the track, come off well, and they always seem to be fast. And if the championship is anywhere close heading down the stretch with the way the schedule lays out, your favorite has to be Newgarden.
Yes. Well, and are Dixon and Carpenter the only drivers? I guess Will Power yeah. is one of the others. But it's like hard to believe. Oh, and Graham, I guess, did in 2008. 2008 was last year. So there's a small handful of guys that have competed. But I just think the schedule, the way it's set up on the ovals, I mean, he's won the Indy 500 and all the other oval races are shorter ovals. This is where Newgarden excels. So I think that being the back half of the season is going to be interesting because he may not be the points leader, you know, say going into the Hy-Vee doubleheader weekend at Iowa coming off Mid-Ohio. But then you look at the rest of the schedule. I mean, you have five oval races over the final seven, right? So you have Toronto and Portland mixed in between. But I mean, Newgarden could make an incredible run basically past the halfway point of the season, even right. if he's not the points leader, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel really strong about Newgarden. And it's been a long time, right? We've seen Ganassi dominate the championship last couple of seasons. Power had a championship, but he only won one race that year. So I think Newgarden is going to be back on top. I really, really feel that this year.
Man, we're boring.
Yeah, I know.
Starting it off.
I know.
Okay.
It feels like a safe pick.
Yeah.
Like last year, I think we were buying into the hype with Pato and McLaren.
We wanted to buy in. I think both of us are wiser this year. It's a more of a prove it.
Yes.
Type year for McLaren. Similar to what last year was. You know what? They didn't prove anything last year.
No, they
didn't
did
even
not.
Win a race. Well, they won, what, two races?
Oh, they didn't win any races.
No, they didn't win any races. That's right.
Yeah. So, IndyCar champion pick, we both go with Newgarden. Huh. So exciting. Okay.
Yes.
Going with the easy choices here. what about this? So, obviously, we both agree it's a Penske or Ganassi driver, but a driver from a different team you think that could win the championship? and not necessarily a dark horse, because I don't think
Pato
that's fair.
Would be on my top of my list. Here's the thing, and we've talked about it before. I mean, coming out of Indy Lights, those were Pato Award and Colton Herta were it. Colton Herta reset the market in terms of salary for IndyCar drivers and got paid for future results that haven't materialized. We keep waiting for this breakout for either one of them in terms of winning a 500 or winning a championship.
Yeah, they place well.
They've had
top four finishes in the championship. They've won races.
But they haven't proven they can do either one in terms of winning a championship, winning an Indianapolis 500. Is this the year that Pato Award can make a run? Is this a year that somebody other than from the top two teams for the first time since 2012 can win a series championship? Because it's something that we gloss over. And I threw this stat at you earlier this week or over the weekend or something. In the last 10 years, last decade of champions in major racing series around the world, Formula One has had two teams that have won championships. We always talk about the dominance of Formula One and how boring it is when you have Mercedes dominating and now you have Red Bull dominating. Well, in IndyCar, you also only have two teams that have won championships in the last 10 years, in Penske and Ganassi. So some of the shade that you throw at F1 for not being competitive, at least for the championship, and I know it's at another level the last 1+ years with Max Verstappen, but still, the last decade, you have the same amount of teams winning championships in IndyCar than you do Formula One. NASCAR Cup has had five different teams win championships in the last 10 years.
It's not just Hendrick anymore.
No.
And I think that says
Hendrick,
a lot.
It's Gibbs. I mean, you had Furniture Row Racing win the championship with Martin Truex Jr. a couple years ago.
Yep.
So it is something. I know people throw around, well, there's more team. But no, the fact of the matter is you have two teams in this series that can win a championship.
Now you have five, six teams that realistically can win a race going into this season, right? But
yeah,
in terms of winning the championship, it still feels like it's those two teams.
And that's why it's a prove it to me. That's why it's difficult for me to even pick somebody that has a chance, because yeah, we know people that can finish in the top three championship, top five, but the consistent finishes that you need to win a championship in IndyCar, there's only two teams that can do it.
Well, and okay, you take those two teams, Ganassi running five entries now this year, adding Kiffin Simpson and Linus Lundqvist, and Penske running three. So that's eight out of a 27-car grid. I mean,
yeah,
not quite
30, about 30%,
yeah,
high 20s.
Not quite a third, but high. And then you throw in McLaren, that's 12. And you throw in Andretti, that's 15 out of 27 entries.
Yes. So it's over half the entries with those
now,
four power teams.
Now, my choice, so you went Pato, right? As far as the non-Penske Ganassi division.
Yeah, I mean, I went Pato Award because, yeah, he was winless last year, but
he had so many podiums, right? He was knocking on the door constantly for
race. He was second. He had back-to-back second-place finishes to start the year. He was second at the road course, right? Indy road course. He had another second late in the year. Gateway, maybe. But he was on the cusp. Four runner-ups last year and finished fourth in the points. I think if there's anybody else, maybe if you're asking me the top finisher outside of Penske and Ganassi drivers in the points, I will take Pato Award.
Pato had seven finishes of second or third place.
So seven podiums, zero wins.
Yeah. I'm gonna go a little different direction. I'm changing it up, and I this will actually lead into our next category. Marcus Ericsson.
Okay.
On a new team at Andretti. I think Andretti, the F1 distraction is off the table for now. They've broken ground and they shared new plans on their massive facility, you know, on the north side of Indy that they're going to have for their new race shop. The current race shop they're in, McLaren's actually going to take over, I believe, by what, the first of 2025. So I think with Ericsson coming on board, he brings the success he had at Ganassi, winning an Indy 500, winning a handful of races, kind of that working with a championship level team, which Andretti's not been right since 2012.
Uh-huh.
I think he is going to fare really well. Cause remember, Ericsson's really great at Indianapolis. We all know that. What is Andretti really strong at? Street courses, right? And Ericsson, he's not a spectacular qualifier, but being with a team that has top street course speed seemingly year in, year out, and that package, and he is a measured, consistent guy.
Mm-hmm.
You have Kirkwood, who's obviously very talented, won two races last year. You have Herta, who is coming off a down year. I think he bounces back. I think Ericsson is going to have a really, really good season. I think him switching teams, you couple the fact with Craig Hampson, as we mentioned last week, coming on board, leaving McLaren, coming over back to Andretti again as an engineer. I think that's a huge move, and I think Ericsson's primed for a massive season.
He just needs to find the consistency. You know, he has stretches where he can be really dominant in terms of top five finishes, and then he can fade. And I think for him, it's all about consistency. And he has yet to finish above sixth in the point standings, even with 3 years at Ganassi. And the way Andretti has not been able to compete for championships, or at least win championships for a decade plus, it's tough to predict, tough to read. But I think if there's anybody, if I'm placing a bet on who has the best chance at Andretti to win a championship, it's not Colton Herta. It's Marcus Ericsson. I do agree with you on that.
So Ericsson is kind of my guy outside the Penske and Ganassi camp that I feel really good about going into this season. New team. He's going to be around a lot of young talent, but he's pretty experienced. Maybe not as experienced in terms of IndyCar goes, pretty similar with Herta, right? But just racing experience. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's a good qualifier, but not outstanding. I just think he's primed for a really good year. So that goes into our next question. Indy 500 prediction winner. Who do you like for pole and who do you like for the win?
Ooh, man. I am going to go... And I decided to go outside the box, at least with my winner pick. Okay.
Okay.
For pole, I will go. Where do I want to go with my pole? I always look at Ganassi and just how good they are. Like, do you go Scott Dixon? But I don't want to. So instead of Scott, I'll stick at the same team and I will go Alex Palou on pole.
Yeah. Funny, because that's who I'm picking as well.
On pole. But you ready for this? The win?
I'm ready for your win because mine's also interesting.
Oh, if we have the same one.
We don't.
I am going with Kyle Kirkwood.
Ooh.
To win the Indianapolis 500.
We do not have the same choice.
I was waiting for you to go, hey, that's mine. You stole mine. The only guy at Andretti to win a race last year, won two of them. Would he crash out at Indy? Was he involved in something last year?
Yeah. He was like top five.
Yeah. He was running well before he crashed out. I think he's going to prove himself this year as he'll finish in the top 10 in points. I think he'll take that next step forward. He'll continue to prove that he's the dude. I mean, so many people forget already just how dominant he was in the junior categories. He's as good of a prospect that this sport has had in the last decade. And I think he begins to show it. I think Andretti will have speed at the 500. They usually have in recent years. And I know people will go Colton Herta. Some people will go Marcus Ericsson. I'm going to go Kyle Kirkwood to win the Indianapolis 500.
I can't believe we're on the same wavelength here with these picks, because I didn't pick Kyle Kirkwood. Okay. But my pick is Marcus Ericsson. And I have very similar reasons, right? I mean, he's shown so well at Indy the last couple of years. He's clearly figured out this package. He's going over to Andretti. As I mentioned before, they get Craig Hampson back. That's going to be a boost for their qualifying. Their qualifying was a little down. They finally have a team with three A-level drivers again.
Right. Yeah.
And three instead of four, because usually the fourth car was kind of a rotating thing. But this is the best driver lineup they have had in quite some time. I get that a couple of years ago they had Herta and Ryan Hunter-Reay and Hinchcliffe, but like those two guys were on the downside of their career, right?
Right.
They weren't in their prime. So I mean, this is as strong of a driver lineup they've had in, I mean, years, right? I'm trying to think back, like the last time you could feel this good about the driver lineup at Andretti. And
it's
I just really
been
think
a long time.
Ericsson has the driver, he has the team to win at Indy. They have the engineering. They've upgraded the staff. I just feel really good about just running four entries. You add Marco into the mix, and maybe that will also help his entry, where it's just not a fifth add-on, but a true fourth entry. So this is a good of a lineup they've had.
Do you have to go back all the way? I'm just looking at their lineup.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
2010 with Kanaan, Marco, and Ryan Hunter-Reay?
You could do 2017 with Sato, Marco, Hunter-Reay, Rossi, Alonso.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And then Harvey was technically with that team, but he was like in a partnership. I mean, you could go to 2017, I think, is kind of the closest.
I'll give you that.
In recent history. But yeah, like, I can't believe we both agree on the team. I get the drivers being different, but yes, we're in full agreement here.
This is no setup. We did not go over any notes prior to recording. So, but I'm going with Kyle Kirkwood. I think he has a really good year, and I think he wins the Indianapolis 500. That's my pick.
And obviously, I already detailed how I feel about Marcus Ericsson, the championship, so I don't really have to go further. And of course, we both agree on the polls that are being below. All right, let's go down the list. Rookie of the year.
All right, let's look at the rookies we have. We got, I think you got to go with Linus Lundqvist, right? I mean, he's the clear favorite.
He's the obvious
the only
choice.
One with the power team other than Kiffin Simpson. So I'll go Linus Lundqvist will be my pick for rookie of the year.
I'm going to go with Tom Blomqvist.
Really?
Pairing with Felix Rosenqvist at Meyer-Shank.
Can Meyer-Shank figure it out?
I think so. I think Blomqvist, here's the thing. I get that he's a rookie, but
he's very experienced
as a race car driver. He's tested Indy cars multiple times. I think he's going to fare really well, especially when we get to more of the natural road courses. And I don't expect him to make mistakes like I would expect kind of some of the younger guys. I mean, remember Linus Lundqvist last year at Nashville, right? Having a great race, made a mistake. And I mean, I'm not picking on him in particular just because of the example, right? He got tired. I think Blomqvist, just because of that added experience, kind of like what we saw last year with Canepino, where maybe it wasn't spectacular, but it was consistent. And that's why I like Blomqvist for Rookie of the Year.
It's not a bad pick. If I didn't have anybody else, if Lundqvist was out, I would have went Blomqvist.
All right. First time winner or winners?
Of any race. Who wins their first race? Let's see here. Somebody's got to do it, right? I mean, is it one of the... it's tough to pick a rookie, isn't it?
It's tough. I have two names in mind. I'll go while you still ponder it.
Well, I mean, I was about to say Christian Lundgaard. He's got to win.
Oh, he's already won.
I know. That's what I was saying. He's already won.
He won twice.
Do you look at David Malukas?
Yeah.
McLaren?
I think he wins a race, assuming he comes back healthy and good to go. There's a chance Ilott could fill in for him at Thermal if necessary. But yeah, David Malukas is one of my picks. I could see him winning one of the oval races, right? He's raced well on short ovals as well, and he'll be with an even stronger team for that.
Right. So yeah, that would be my pick for who is going to get their first win. What, you had somebody else though?
Yes.
In addition to Malukas.
In addition to David Malukas, I like Marcus Armstrong to get a win as well. He had a lot of experience last year, ran well in that partial season schedule. I just think he's set up for a pretty good year. He showed well in flashes, obviously. I mean, we're not talking like spectacular results last year, but had several top tens. I think he gets a win. Ganassi is one of the strongest teams, right? And whether it's Armstrong or Lundqvist, I'm going to go with Armstrong just because he has more seat experience.
Yeah, he does.
But I think that's my choice there.
No, it's a good pick with Marcus Armstrong for sure. Now in his second year,
first time winners. So we'll go with those two. And man, we've covered the main categories. Is there biggest surprise and biggest disappointment? So let's start with biggest surprise.
Are we doing anything? Could be team. Could be driver.
Yeah, it could be anything.
I think the biggest disappointment for me until they prove it. Prove me different is Arrow McLaren. The amount of investment that this team has made between drivers' salaries, between support staff, between equipment, all that stuff, this is a team that should be competing for championships. Should be. And I have to question if they're real contenders. They'll have good finishes. I mean, last year, they couldn't even win a race. They got to win a race this year, right? So... For McLaren, is as great as it has been for them to be in this sport in the series, they have not lived up to expectations. When McLaren said they were coming to IndyCar, we're like, oh, here we go. Give them a year,
they'll
two
compete
tops
with Penske and Ganassi,
and they will be up there with Penske and Ganassi, and they're not. And what is this year five? Full-time?
Yeah, year five. I mean, because 2020, they started with Pato essentially a rookie, and then Oliver Askew. So, I mean, you get a pass for that first year.
Yeah,
young lineup,
so.
But it was clear Pato was going to be a really good driver, and they've won races with Pato, but Pato's the only one to win races.
You thought 2022, they'll really start hitting their stride.
Yeah.
This time last year, we're going, watch out for McLaren. They couldn't even win a race last year.
That's with adding Alexander Rossi to the lineup. Now this year, I feel like the lineup's actually taking a step back. Felix Rosenqvist, more experienced, more on the resume than David Malukas. David Malukas, clearly fast, right? He can excel on the ovals in particular, but the driver lineup has gone down. I mean, you look at like Andretti, for example, their driver lineup improved dramatically in the offseason. McLaren's has taken a bit of a step back, not a huge step back, but just a slight step back.
Yeah, but there's still only, Rossi has his moments, but you look at that lineup and you say, who wins a race here? Mm-hmm. You're looking at Pato and a bunch of question marks. I mean, I said Malukas could win a race, and that's anticipating McLaren taking a significant step forward, but who's to say they do?
I'm going to go. So McLaren, I think, is my, like, the obvious choice. Like, yep. I would also agree with you on that. I'm going to go with my biggest disappointment. I'm going to go with Grosjean and
Juncos. Okay.
Grosjean is clearly very fast. The talent's there, but it's just the consistency is not. And what happened last year where he had his moments but never could put it together, that's one thing at a big team where you have the raw speed to work with, which he did, especially on straight circuits with Andretti. It's another when the cars don't have the kind of raw speed to begin with on weekends, and I think it's going to be a struggle. He did, when he came in early on, outperform at Coin, but that was a better Coin at that time. I would say Coin then is still a step up from what Juncos is right now at the moment. At least that's what we expect going into the season. And I think there's not really hype. That's not the right word, but there's maybe some anticipation for how he's going to do it, Juncos, and I just don't see it going well.
Can Romain Grosjean really balance the expectations with the team with his expectations? Because I think his expectations last year were high because he was with a quote-unquote power team, right? Andretti. He's no longer with a power team. So does his expectations then go down as well? Because you're not going to be competing for wins at Juncos. You're going to be competing for, hopefully, top tens. And can he adjust to that? He can say he has, but when we get into the thick of the season and he's going out there with, at best, a top 10, top 15 car time and time again, can he measure or really limit his expectations on what the car is giving him? Because he's not going to be as competitive as he was with Andretti, and he could barely handle that.
Meanwhile, biggest surprise.
Biggest surprise this season. Huh, let me think. Maybe this is more hopeful for me than anything, but I'd like to see a bounce back year for Ed Carpenter Racing. You have Rinus VK back again after a disappointing season last year. I think we can all agree it was a disappointing season for Rinus VK. And then you add Christian Rasmussen, and we had Rob Howden on last week, and he was gushing about Christian Rasmussen. He thinks he can be that next guy that really performs extremely well for a mid-tier team and then gets a big opportunity in the next couple of years for a power team. I want to see Ed Carpenter Racing get back to it. For too long, it's been, well, watch out for Ed Carpenter Racing at Indy, and they're an afterthought everywhere else. And it just feels like, you know, winning in 2021 on the road course, gosh, it feels like 10 years ago, doesn't it? When Rinus VK did that. Because it was like, okay, Rinus VK did this. It set the tone, and he has one podium since that win in the last 2 years. Zero podiums last year, finished 14th. He went from 12th in the standings in 2021, 12th in 2022, 14th last year. And, you know, you had Ed Carpenter in the car. You had Ryan Hunter-Reay late in the season. You had Connor Daly early in the season, right before he was dismissed. It was just, nothing seemed to go right last year. I think it's a reset in a lot of ways for Ed Carpenter Racing. Rinus VK finds himself again. I think Christian Rasmussen can compete for a rookie of the year if everything goes well. The biggest surprise for me will be Ed Carpenter Racing. I'm not saying they're competing for wins and stuff, but they are at the end of the season going to go, hey, you know what? That team took a significant step forward. What about you?
I'm going to go a bit off the wall. Get away from teams, from drivers, all of that. How about this one? Honda goes to NASCAR, but also remains an IndyCar.
All right. Okay.
I think there's something to be said. So they're complaining about the costs, right, for IndyCar and the return on investment. That's what it's always about in terms of marketing spends, right, for businesses. You want to make sure you're getting return on your investment. And I think IndyCar will make the tweaks needed, like going to a spec engine where engineers can update software, right? And that's kind of the focus as opposed to the actual engine development. And that will keep Honda happy. They'll stay. But I think they'll also go to NASCAR because they were seen, what, at the Daytona 500. And there's a lot of talk about that. So I think that's the news that comes down this season, that Honda stays. They also go to NASCAR. But again, keep on in IndyCar. I think that'd be a huge positive.
I think it would be a surprise, and maybe we're a little hopeful
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you got to be, right?
Yeah. The hopeful surprise, potentially. Yeah. All right. What else we got? Because I got a couple I'll throw at you.
Okay. Throw some more at me because that was my list.
All right. So in terms of the team most in need of a quote unquote successful season, and quote unquote successful means different things to each team. I look at McLaren. I look at Meyer Shank. Which one is in need of a better season?
McLaren.
Yeah.
I think McLaren, I mean, they gotta win races. Plural, right? You gotta win 2+ races this year as a team. You gotta show that all that investment you made that last year was a fluke. I think with Meyer Shank, you've revamped your driver lineup. McLaren, you're returning 2 of the 3 same guys. And remember, you thought you had Alex Blow, you're recording him, everything was locked in, then it all fell apart last summer. So I think there's more pressure on McLaren. I think with Meyer Shank, you have a rookie coming in and Tom Blomqvist, who's very experienced as a sports car driver, very successful. He will find his stride later in the season. And then Felix Rosenqvist is as solid as they come. He's consistent. Yeah, he's not flashy, but he can do good things for you as a team. I think they'll be a lot better, a lot more consistent. And then having Elio running in the Indy 500 and apparently the potential, he could do the Hy-Vee double at Milwaukee as well. That thrown out there. But I think that will be the kind of how that team goes. And Elio's car, by the way, looks really cool.
Yes, it does.
The Cleveland Cliffs sponsorship, white and what kind of a royal blue.
Mm-hmm.
But Elio with a multi-year deal to keep running the 500 for Meyer Shank, obviously minority owner as well.
I would agree with you. Final question for me. Which team at the end of the season has more race wins? We're not talking championship. We're having more race wins, Penske or Ganassi?
Whew. I'll go Penske.
Okay.
I think we seem to rotate every year, right? Last year was a Ganassi year.
Yeah.
I think this year will be a Penske year. I think Scotty Mack, we haven't talked about him at all.
We have not.
Outside of, you know, the kind of the core four, Dixon, Pelot, Newgarden, Will Power, Scotty Mack is right there, right? And maybe he is a guy we should have given more credit for in terms of being a true championship contender. He can run well on ovals. We know he can win races. This is year 3, right? This is maybe the time he makes the jump, and maybe he's the guy who surprises us all and wins the title.
Well, what we've seen the last couple years is post-Indy, Scott McLaughlin is one of the best in the series. It's pre-Indy that he really needs to find himself. Yeah, 2 years ago, he won St. Pete, finished second in Texas. But then 4 of his next 5 races, he was 14th or worse. Last year, starts off with 13th, 6th, 10th. He wins at Barber and then finishes 16th and 14th and in May at Indy and then turned it on. Never had anything outside of a top 9 finish the rest of the way. I think you're looking at consistency, but every year, Scott McLaughlin has gotten better. He went 14th in his rookie season in points. He was 4th in 2022. He was 3rd last year. This is why Penske brought him in to really become a championship contender. Year 4, does he break through?
Does he beat
Joseph Newgarden to the line at Nashville to win the championship?
Hey, I'd love a photo finish on an oval. IndyCar can use those again. That'd be nice.
Yeah, NASCAR's getting all the photo finishes on ovals nowadays.
All right, well, that does it for our preseason predictions. Sure to go wrong. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg coming up this weekend as we record this Thursday night, March 7th. So March 8th through 10th, taking a look at the weekend schedule. IndyCar practice 1 all times Eastern, 2:45 to 4 o'clock on Friday. Peacock, IndyCar Live, SiriusXM, IndyCar Radio, same outlets as normal. Practice 2 is 9:35 in the morning Saturday to 10:35. So an hour session there. Qualifying 2 to 3:30 Saturday afternoon. And then there's the warm-up on Sunday from 9:10 to 9:40 in the morning. And then the race on Sunday on NBC, Peacock, Universo, IndyCar Live, SiriusXM, and IndyCar Radio. TV coverage starts at noon. Green flag approximately 12:15.
Let's get at it. 15
do you
minutes.
Do you have a winner prediction for this?
Oh, man, St. Pete's always so difficult because you just don't, you have no idea. But I will go, when in doubt, I go Alex Pelot.
Okay. I'm going to go with Scott McLaughlin.
Okay. Just talked about him. Talked about how good of a season he potentially could have, and
nearly won this race last year.
Won it the year before.
Yeah.
So it's a good pick.
All right. And with that, if you agree or disagree with our picks, and I'm sure you could go either way with those, let us know. We'd love for you to interact with us. You can find us IndyCar Podcast on Instagram, on Twitter/X, on Facebook. Just search for New Track Record. You can email us newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our website, newtrackrecordpodcast.com. While you're there, check out the store. We have t-shirts and stickers for sale for you. And Patreon. You can support us on there, patreon.com/newtrackrecord. Thanks to Xavier and others for their support. Again, starting just $1 a month to support us. And as always, download the podcast on your favorite podcasting platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts, and listen in for free. And don't forget to contact us through those outlets, and a lot of you have this week, for the Fantasy IndyCar Challenge. All you got to do, message us your email address, and we will send you an invite to get you in the Friends of New Track Record 2024 League. So if you sent us an invite and for some reason we missed it, just send it again. We'll make sure we get you taken care of, get you added to the league. So prizes this year.
Ooh, prizes.
So we have a pack of the vintage trading cards that we broke, 2 weeks ago?
Uh-huh.
Right? It's called breaking a pack, right?
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Okay. We broke a pack on this podcast.
A box break or something. Uh-huh. So that's from 92, correct? 91, 92?
Yes.
So you'll win a pack of those.
Tickets to the 92 500, by the way.
I don't think you did.
Okay.
I hate to break it to you. I don't think you won. A pack of the new IndyCar trading cards. We'll send you a sticker. And of course, as always, we'll give you your opportunity to gloat in the off season on the podcast with an interview as well. So good luck to everyone. Thanks for playing along. We're at 43?
Yeah, I was just going through it because I had an invite, but it's still antiquated on the IndyCar app, okay? So here's the problem. So if you register a team, okay, and it has this, it registers all of your teams. So Caleb, for example, is the fourth year of doing it. When he registered, it put all four of his teams from 4 years in. So if you've played with this more than once, if this is more the second time or more that you played, change the name of your team. Get a new team name. So when I go to delete the ones that aren't scoring, that are from previous years, I'm not deleting the wrong one. So once we get into the first, second weeks and I can look and see who has zeros, then I can go in. If, for instance, Daily Optimism, there's three Daily Optimisms in there. I don't know which one is which because Fantasy IndyCar operates from 2004 technology. I swear. The easiest thing would be is to put a link out there, right? Follow the link, go register. No, we have to actually do it through email. And then when we send the email out, it invites and accepts all of your former teams in there as well. IndyCar doesn't make it easy, but we'll try our best on our end.
Yes, we will. So just again, message us, whether it's email, Twitter DM, Facebook message, Instagram, however you want to get in touch, just send us your email address, say you want to join the Fantasy League, and we will get that taken care of before Sunday. But again, please don't wait till Sunday to request to join.
Because I'll be working this weekend, so I won't be able to mess around with it on Sunday morning. I'll be working, so get it to me Friday, Saturday. Give me some time to get it in there when I have a free moment. Don't be doing it at the 11th hour.
Yes, do not delay. But you know the prizes, you know how it works. We hope you join us for this year. And like you said, we're closing in on 45 entries. So
yeah, I think we're between 45 and 50.
We should top last year.
Yes.
Which I think we were close. So again, everyone send your entries our way. And we hope to be talking to you down the road in about 6 months' time.
Yeah, well, you can gloat on being the champion of our fantasy league.
That's right. And with that, time for the mailbag. Not a ton to get to. Last week, we had a million that we had to skip over because there was just too much going on, right? This week, different problem. Just not a ton going on, but it feels good to be ready for everything that's coming down because there's just so much, right? There's so much coming down over the next, week plus with all this. All right. So with that, from the mailbag, We start things off. This from NK Harden. Caleb was spot on. F1 is a joke. Every listener to the pod that I know doesn't care about it. People think it's cool now. So is the mall, MySpace, instant messaging, and BlackBerry phones. All were more entertaining than F1. All will end up the same.
Did you have a BlackBerry phone?
I did not.
I did.
You did?
Yes, I did.
That's so cool.
I know. It was just, you know, the palm, kind of like a palm plat thing, had the little, oh yeah, I had it back in the day. It was futuristic technology.
You posted this poll outside of Penske Ganassi, next team to win an IndyCar championship. Nearly 61% of you said McLaren, 34% Andretti, 4% Ray Hall, 1% other. NK Harden also saying, nice of you guys put Ray Hall on there.
I had to get a third team in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, true. Brady BC3 said, I would have said McLaren, but after the F1 snub, I think Andretti gets it all put together. You wonder if there's a mindset.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Is it,
which I'm counting on it happening.
Yeah, I don't think Andretti is going to be pouting and all that stuff, but I do wonder, like, will it be a boost to them? Will it light a fire under them? Or will it still kind of like not bleed over into IndyCar? I don't know. I would think Michael and the Andretti family's approach would be like, you know what? We're going to go out and dominate what we can dominate. We haven't seen Andretti be a dominant force in quite some time in IndyCar. Could this be the fire lit under them to return them to that status in this series?
Let's hope.
Yes. What F1's loss is our gain, hopefully.
You posted, you talked about this earlier. We like the TBA lineup better, talking about Coyne. Tyler underscore Allen saying, for several years, Coyne seemed to have their stuff together. We're making a lot of progress with Justin Wilson and then Sebastian Bourdais. They were constant contenders. They started getting some good sponsors. Now back to their old ways. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just,
Jeremy from HBG said, I was only off by a couple days. Talking about TBA.
Yep.
BK Hickey said, good thing Excel isn't down like Facebook and Insta at the time, because it was earlier this week. Is I need to prepare a spreadsheet to keep track of which drivers racing which race.
That's the biggest thing. Make sure you send that to Coyne, right? Too, so they can keep track as well.
I can't keep track.
No.
Jay Blasteri said, the more Braun we see at Coyne in 2024, the better.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah,
I
totally.
Fully agree with that.
That was maybe the most disappointing thing to me, is he only being guaranteed two races.
Which tells me he's not bringing any money.
Right.
That's, I think, the clear takeaway.
I mean, it's obvious that Siegel's bringing money that Braun doesn't have, because he's getting twice as many races as of now.
McLaren is going to have a double-decker NTT Data Strategy Control Center. 2 miles of Ethernet cabling routed inside, according to Nathan Brown of the Indy Star. He posted a picture on his Twitter. Poet Shevchenko saying, it's a good thing that IndyCar controls costs to the teams with engines or chassis. The double-decker strategy center is what the fans really want.
Well, that's the thing that we mentioned earlier in the podcast, right? In terms of McLaren, like the investment they're making in this team.
Massive.
They can't even win races. Let alone, they're not competing for championships. They're not winning Indy 500s. They couldn't even win a single race last year. So that's why you look at McLaren as continuously having the most pressure on them in this series to perform, because it's McLaren and we expect it a lot better. And maybe this double-decker strategy center will be the missing piece. We'll see.
Yeah, we certainly will see. All right, that wraps up the mailbag. Pretty short, sweet, to the point this week. Time to take a look at news and notes, and we have several items to get to. First off, we talked about this before, the charter system, right? They aim to have that finalized before this year's Indy 500, but they did walk back kind of the talk on guaranteed spots for the Indy 500.
Which, yes, they did, but now that you've kind of thrown it out there, the teams are wanting that, and I don't blame the teams. So how do you put that back in the box after you initially threw it out there? I don't know. It's like offering somebody, you know, you
offer
free
candy
pizza
to a baby, and then you take it away, right?
And then that they're going to remember that. So, yeah, I don't know what you want to do. I don't know.
It is a great question. Meanwhile, we have the interesting nuggets involving Nashville, involving hybrids. Mark Miles said this pulled from Adam Stern. On one hand, we're late talking about hybrid out there, but for Honda, it's kind of a bridge strategy. So they're moving more toward fully electric. Now it's looking like hybrid is the place to land for some time. We think it's going to end up being fortuitous. I will say this, he's not wrong with how things are going in the car market, and maybe IndyCar, right? A broken clock is right twice a day, right? Maybe they've struck gold here.
Well, the thing is with the electric cars, everybody was like, that's the future, that's the future. And then it kind of topped out at about, what, 10%, you think? Because everybody that's wanted an electric car now has one, basically. So it's kind of flatlined, at least until the technology can get better. My brother has a Tesla, okay? It is a nice car. It is terrible in terms of planning it out on where you're going to drive. Until the infrastructure is bigger in this country for electric cars, you're going to top out about 10% of the cars being electric. So who blinks first? Is it massive investment by the government to put this stuff in? Is it private investment? Who knows? But there is something to be said that you saw the numbers going up 3%, 5%, 7%, to 10% of people that have electric cars, and then it just stopped. And that's kind of where we're at right now. And hybrid technology is kind of where it's at. And IndyCar, while yes, late to the party, is at the party at least, and that at least for the foreseeable future could be the future on the roads.
Yeah, in a way, IndyCar got kind of lucky in this situation.
That rarely happens, doesn't it?
Yes.
Rarely happens.
It's certainly lucky. That's all I'm going to say. Thermal. They've cut ticket prices. So I saw this first on the IndyCar Reddit, and I think Marshall Pruitt put out an article. Tickets reduced from $2,000 for the weekend to $500. They've already issued partial refunds. Those emails went out about a week ago to fans who had already bought tickets. And then also apparently the county is opening up for more people. So that's why they lowered the price. At least that's their reasoning.
So they say they're going to have more people there. It's not.
Yes.
It's not because nobody's going.
That's what they're saying.
Okay. We'll see.
Whether I believe that or not, you could leave that up to your own interpretation.
Now, you made a good point, too, is $500 for the weekend is not bad. $2,000 was dumb, but dropping it to $500?
Well, again, you're getting a lot out of that $500. Like,
a lot
you
of perks.
You get, obviously, like, paddock access.
Mm-hmm.
You're there, this exclusive, like, club that you would... Most Swanky average club. People would never be able to get into.
Now, does it include lodging at Thermal?
That I don't know.
Okay.
But, I mean, it includes your pit pass, essentially, paddock pass. It includes, obviously, watching the race. It includes food and drink for $500 for the weekend, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's a weekend ticket. So, for 3 days, you...
For $500 for
look,
food
I get
and
it. For us
covered?
From the Midwest, that's an absurd price.
Oh, yeah, it's a good point. But California?
For California, that's not that bad.
That's like a fourth of your rent.
Like that would be like paying, you know, $200, $250 for a 3 day pass at Road America. But again, right. It's including a pit pass and a paddock pass.
Yeah. And food.
And food.
And drinks.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
I must say that's the price they should have gone with to begin with. But again, now that they can allow more people, we'll see what ticket sales are like. And it's a one-off event. And here's the thing. That event is successful. If there's for IndyCar, it's successful. You get one partner agreement out of it.
Yeah. If you have one rich
Thermal,
company, rich person, write a check.
Yes. And for Thermal, it's successful. If you sell just one lot.
Yeah. Because those are how much they have to pay?
Millions.
$1 million. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you sell one lot, you feel like it's a success.
Yep.
And obviously it's the marketing exposure that they want for that because they got to start selling more lots. That's the key. For Thermal and all of that.
Yeah, the goals for Thermal, for that race, for the track, are different than anywhere else than IndyCar races.
Yes. Other notes, AMR and GMR back as far as the safety team, multi-year extension. So good news for that.
Yep.
Not a surprise. They've done a great job. Michael Shank will not be on the timing stand. For this year, for IndyCar.
Saw that. That's interesting.
That via Marshall Pruitt, racer.com. And also, you have a signing in IndyNext/IndyLights. Michael DiOrlando signs with Andretti Cape Motorsports. It will drive the number 3 car. So again, two of those partner Cape cars for Andretti. That confirmed. IndyCar announcing a content alliance with Dirty Mo Media, which is Dale Jr., the Speed Street Pod. Which is Connor Daly, and his podcast will interview the race winner each week. Excerpts of the show available across the series' official social platforms. Always cool. Good to get exposure through Dale Jr.'s media entity.
Yes.
And a couple other interesting things. So we have items from the mailbag. And I think the first surprise is the chassis thing, which came out last week. They're discussing a new chassis for 2027. But there's not really any details on
it. Well, the biggest thing to me that's laughable is it was news when Mark Miles said this, that we're targeting 2027. It was news to everyone, including the teams and the manufacturers. So you're telling everybody 2027, we're targeting for a new engine formula, and Chevy and Honda are like, really? First time we're hearing of it.
Concerning.
Typical IndyCar.
Very, very concerning.
I have nothing else to say. Yeah. It's typical.
Yeah, there's really not much else to say.
Exasperated
that.
Sigh.
And Pruitt also saying in the mailbag, this nugget, still over $50 million per year to make IndyCar engines happen for each manufacturer. And that could be brought down to half or less. Conversations about staying for 2027 are much easier to have. Yeah. And I think that's possible.
Right.
They just got to change how they do it.
Well, and I think something that I mentioned to you in the last couple of days is IndyCar has focused for so long and done a good job at lowering the cost as much as possible for the teams. And that's a reason why you have 27 full-time cars on the grid starting this weekend in St. Pete. They've made it affordable for teams comparatively to years ago to compete. Yeah, the costs are kind of rising, but you're making more money, inflation's rising, all that stuff. Everything's going up. But what they haven't done, have they done that to the detriment of not focusing on your suppliers and your partners in lowering costs for them? Because the focus for so long has been, we gotta take care of the teams. How much have they gone teams instead of partners? And now the partners like Honda are going, we're spending way too much here. And I'm not saying it's negligent, because IndyCar has done a good job at cutting the costs for the teams, but has it been at the expense of passing on a lot of that expense to your partners? And is that really hurting you now, especially in relation to Honda?
Yes, very much so. Other notes. That was really the only key takeaway from the mailbag.
Well, it
right?
was that, and basically laying out the outrage that the teams are having about the switch at Nashville to the Oval. Because the drivers, when this was announced, they were taking to social media and towing the company line about how great this was. But the teams behind the scenes telling a different story to Marshall Pruitt.
Well, and that's because, to entertain your sponsors with a race there, right? And the hotels are already booked. And yeah, Pruitt was saying they can't get refunds on hotels. I'm actually surprised by that, because when you book that far in advance,
you should be able to.
For that weekend, they probably have a no refund policy. Perhaps that could be why.
Yeah,
because it's a marquee event weekend, right? So,
right.
I understand the frustration with the teams, and it would help if IndyCar and the promoter took more ownership.
Yeah, because IndyCar is like, not our problem.
Tried to kind of help the teams with that. I will say this though. As long as you're able to keep your clients downtown and have entertainment spaces for them down there and sponsors and partners, all that stuff, but then take them to the race and give them the access and see Indy cars on an oval, going over 200 miles an hour, that usually does the trick.
Hopefully. But I imagine some of these partnership deals, these sponsorship deals that IndyCar teams made for 2024 were largely, or at least had some impact on, hey, season finale, we're racing through the streets of Nashville. We're going to have all you guys and gals of the company out there. It's going to be great going down Lower Broadway, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, you know what? We're in. We can't wait. And now you take that away, and there's probably some companies that are like, we agreed to this at this amount of money, expecting to be downtown in Nashville, and now you're not? That's tough for the teams to then explain, because they effectively had the rug pulled out from under them. They had nothing to do with it. So it's not really blaming IndyCar, but at the same time, once again, it just seems like another PR issue that shouldn't have been an issue kind of thing.
Yeah, just another thing to add to the list.
Yeah.
One other note I want to get to. Nathan Brown, a good story on Ray Hall's team. Yuri Vips could run a couple races in a part-time fourth car in 2024. Not really a surprise. That just depends on the team securing an engine lease from Honda, which they already have Sato, right, for that fourth entry for the Indy 500.
Yes.
All right. I think that just about does it.
I thought there was an interesting story today from Nathan Brown about the proposal to have an off week during the summer.
Yeah, Gavin
Kinda
Ward.
Like a summer shutdown.
Who's leading McLaren. Wants a shutdown week, trying to protect, you know, essentially the mental health of teams and having a shutdown week. Great idea. I love it. The fact that other teams said no is disappointing, but not surprising.
Especially with the natural gap you're going to have because of the Olympics. Like, why not just shut down for a week? But
give everyone that much deserved true break.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, F1 does it. Now, I know they're traveling the world as opposed to North America, but they do it. They have a summer shutdown for a couple weeks. But maybe it'll gain traction later on in kind of ensuing years, but it was shut down pretty quick from IndyCar teams.
Unfortunate, but I guess not unexpected. And one other note, forgot to get to this earlier, our three key stats for St. Pete.
Oh, yes. What do we got?
Chad Smith, Chad 200. Always love these. Four of the 20 races have been won from pole position. Power, 9 total poles. No other driver in history has more than one. That's hard to believe. He's qualified on the front row 12 times, 269 laps led. Dixon, Rossi, Pelot, and Award combined. 35 starts, 11 podiums, 16 top fives, 277 laps led, 0 wins.
Something give this weekend.
Yeah, we shall see. Tweets of the week, just one, but pretty simple. This from Scott McLaughlin, S. McLaughlin 93. Yeah, why wouldn't you want two extra cars on the grid? We'll never know, right? We'll never know.
Two more cars for Max to beat, I guess.
And with that, time for our random split error driver of the week.
All right, we're going to 2007 and Champ Car, and I left the window open over there on the computer, and who do we got?
We have Jan Halen.
Yes.
The Belgian. Very talented driver in his career, raced in the Champ Car World Series 2006 and 2007. Also, did compete in Indy Lights in 2010 with Team E at St. Pete, which I don't remember this at all.
Me neither.
I mean, I think I would have like caught on to that, but he was with Dale Coyne Racing in 2006, ran the full season, finished 14th in the standings, had a 5th at Cleveland, his best finish, Long Beach, 7th, Montreal, he was 9th, Road America, he was also 9th. Those were his lone top 5 or top 10 finishes. And then in 2007, he was at Conquest, finished 16th in the standings, didn't complete the full season, did not do Mexico City, Surfers, Houston, Long Beach, or Las Vegas. But he did get a 2nd place at the Bavaria Champ Car Grand Prix at Circuit Assen.
I had no idea
TT
they
Circuit
raced.
Assen.
I had no idea they raced at Assen.
Yeah, in the Netherlands. That was where they had several. They had a Belgian race that year at Circuit Zolder in Belgium. He was 13th there, 2nd again at TT Assen, 6th at Road America, 9th at San Jose, 10th at Edmonton. So
Champ Car was such an afterthought for me at that
right?
point. Like
it was.
It was like
it was.
I had no idea that they raced in the
after
Netherlands.
After 2003, that was that was about. I mean, for me, like I stopped following because all the top teams and drivers outside of
they had
Paul Tracy and then Bourdais came in 2004. That I mean, it was an afterthought.
I mean, not to take anything away from Sebastian Bourdais winning 4 consecutive championships, but that was as watered down of a series as you're going to find in terms of major motorsport. And getting back to Halen though, so he brought sponsorship. Just like back in the day, brought sponsorship to Dale Coyne Racing from the Mermans Group and Berghoff Worldwide, which I think is it Berghoff the beer Berghoff beer. Brewery?
I'm not sure.
He was a partner with Cristiano D'Amata in that 2006 season, ended the season 14th in the standings. The sponsorship dried up, though, in 2007. That race at Assen was his final one for Conquest Racing.
And he got a 2nd.
He got a 2nd.
His best finish.
Doesn't matter how good you are if you can't bring sponsorship. But he's had a very, very successful post Champ Car career.
Absolutely. A lot of success. In fact, he won at IMS in 2020, racing in the GT4 America in 2020. So he finished sixth overall that season. I did that for a full season in 2020. Also, he's raced, you know, plenty of sports car experience, right? He won the Michelin Pilot Challenge in 2021 with Wright Motorsport. He's competed in GT World Challenge America / Pirelli World Challenge. Intercontinental GT Challenge 8-hour, did that a couple of years. Also with Wright Motorsport, finished first in 2020, as I mentioned. 2021, he was third. In IMSA, competed in a handful of races. American Le Mans. He's all over the board, but notable finish. He was second with Wright Motorsports in GTD in 2022. Won Daytona that season. Also won at Laguna Seca as well. He's won at Sebring back in 2020 in the GTD class. So plenty of success, and has competed in the 24 Hours of Le Mans a couple of times with Patrick Dempsey's team in 2022. He was fifth in his class in GTE. In 2023, did not finish with Proton competition.
Interestingly enough, outside of the cockpit in 2019, he returned to a management role, joining the Mazda Road to Indy's USF 2000 series as race director for the 2019 season.
I don't know how I don't remember this.
Me neither. I just, I
feel like Jan Halen is a well-known sports car driver, a name I remember. I don't remember him competing though in Champ Car. That's the thing.
Me neither.
I don't really recall it happening.
But
you know another name, speaking of drivers from that era, Robert Doornbos.
Yes.
Remember him?
Yep. Yep. I can never spell his last name.
Yeah.
Two O's. So yeah, for sure. But when you get, when Kart turns to Champ Car, it is a treasure.
That's where
trove.
The true random split era driver begins for Kart / Champ Car. It's 2004.
Yes, absolutely. So a successful career for Jan Halen. But a quick cup of coffee, so to speak, in Champ Car, which is pretty much at this point all anybody wanted before you had better opportunities come. He had plenty of opportunities come after his stint in Champ Car. So Jan Halen, this week's random split era driver of the week.
And that does it for us as we lead into the 2024 IndyCar season. Next week, our first race recap episode. I can't believe it's finally here.
Let's go. Let's have a nice, fun, clean, dramatic weekend in St. Pete.
Yes, please. And next week, I'm not even sure what day we will record. So just a heads up.
Yeah, we got conflicting schedule.
We'll figure something out. So we'll figure it out. But we will we'll have a race recap for you next week, sooner rather than later. For Justin Kinney, I'm Caleb Hatch. Thanks again for joining us on New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media.